Now you start? Now you start. Well, my laptop's barfing all over itself. That's great. That's great. That's great. Just great. Sure.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
Let's go.
Hey, everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. None of us is as smart as all of us. We're trying to make it today make sense. Kai's laptop is barfing. I'm not really sure what that means, but I'm here for you, buddy. I've got my DuckDuckGo ready to go. Whatever you need.
I've got my laptop. I got my iPad. I got all kinds of things. It's going black, and then it's firing up again, and then it's going black. Anyway, so, holy cow. It's Wednesday. What do you want to know Wednesday? As I was saying to my boss's boss this morning when I was chit-chatting with him, it's weird to be living in times that you know are going to be in the history books hundreds of years from now. Hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yep.
Banana pants, if I could appropriate a phrase from my friend across the aisle, Ms. Wood.
I mean, you know? What you just described about your laptop is exactly what's happening in my brain today. So, yes.
Yeah, well, there
Maybe
you go.
You're creating you go. A magnetic field that's just like, it's just blipping off and on.
That's right.
Yeah, I
that's
saw right. a tweet today that said, like, I would really like soon to be able to have a day that is not a day that we're going to be talking about for years. But today was not that day. No, it was not.
No, it was not.
No, it was not. There have been 4 presidential impeachments throughout history because, asterisk, President Nixon resigned to avoid being impeached, and 2 of them have been President Trump. Like, literally, our kids think this happens all the time. And
oh,
it's
I
only
know.
The 4th one ever. They're like, oh, impeaching the president must be Tuesday. But no.
Yeah. It's actually Wednesday. It's actually Wednesday,
it is Wednesday,
not Tuesday.
So we're not going to talk.
What do you want to know Wednesday? So we should do our
Any
thing.
More about
yes?
that at all, which is great. Yes, let's get to our first question. Yeah. Jessica in Nevada writes, I just thought that was an interesting fact about how there were only 4. Jessica in Nevada writes, can you please explain stagflation? And do you think either is going to take over the economy in 2021? Mm-hmm. Either being inflation or stagnation, I guess, or stagflation. But yeah, go.
Right. Right. Okay. So let me answer the second part of your question. First, Jessica, no, it's not going to happen in this economy in 2021, and here's why. Stagflation is a, SAT word alert, portmanteau, I love that word, of stagnation and inflation. That is to say economic stagnation, not much growth at all, but also with high-ish inflation. And here's what's going to happen in 2021. We're going to have some economic growth. Once the vaccine hits, once the economy starts firing again, there will be economic growth. There will not be inflation because inflation has not been a thing in this economy for these many 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years now, right? There is no inflation in this economy, so we're not going to have stagflation. Might inflation go up a little bit? Sure, a little bit. I mean, it's honestly, consumer prices came out this morning. They were up 1.4%. Year on year, December to December, 19 to 20. So it's just not going to happen. But when it does happen, when there is stagflation, when an economy is stuck and not growing, right, and you have inflation and usually high unemployment at the same time, it's really bad, right? Because the purchasing power of people's dollar erodes. They often don't have jobs. And so that's a problem as well. And without purchasing power from consumers, economies can't grow and it becomes a self-fulfilling sort of death spiral. So anyway, that's stagflation. It's economic stagnation and high inflation. We don't have it now, and we're not going to have it this year.
What Ta-da. Is the, what is, I know, well done. But what is a meaningful increase? Because, you know, like you sound really confident, and I want to believe you, but prices are going up, and the economy is still sort of sputtery. And so like what's the metric, I guess, for crossing over into stagflation versus just kind of like you're screwed?
Yeah. Well, we're screwed anyway, sister. So, you know, but that's a whole different non-economic thing. I don't know what the threshold is for stagflation, right? I'm sure there's an economist out there who can tell us that. But look, yes, prices are going up, right? Like if you've been paying attention, gas prices are up, food prices are up, but those prices are also highly volatile. They change a lot. And so what economists do is they take those out of the calculation, right? And they get you to something called core inflation, which is minus food and energy costs. That is to say the prices that are stable over time. And those prices, generally speaking, are not going up a lot for a lot of reasons, right? There's not a lot of worker productivity in this economy right now, so workers don't have a lot of wage power, so they can't actually pay more for things, so companies have to moderate their prices. I mean, there's a lot going on. It's just not going to happen. I'd be super surprised. I'd be super, super surprised. The Federal Reserve has been trying with all of its economic might, or as Jay Powell, the chairman of the Fed, says, its great power to get inflation to go up, and they haven't been able to do it for honest to God since the financial crisis. So I'm not too worried about it.
I'm realizing at this exact moment, and I tried to search real quick and find it, I'll look, but that I actually saw a headline go by this morning, I think, about a business group saying, hey, companies, you're probably going to have to start raising wages in order to have sustained economic growth, which gets to both your point and also duh.
Yeah, the catch, of course, is that we're still 10 million jobs down from where we were in February, right? So there's a whole slice of people who just want a job, you know, paychecks be damned.
Totally.
They just want a job, right?
I got to find that piece. Anyway. Okay, next.
There we go. So let's see. After Parler got kind of nuked by Amazon Web Services and has sued to get back on but has not been able to do it, Jillian in New Jersey sent us this. Here we go.
Hi, Molly and Kai. So when I read that Amazon Web Services had stopped hosting Parler, literally my first thought was that I needed to discuss the implications with you two pod friends. Assuming that other big American tech companies will continue to disassociate with Parler, what's to stop them from migrating to a Russian or Chinese tech company? The thought of the Russian or Chinese governments then having access to the digital fingerprints and data patterns of Americans who are primed for being radicalized is pretty frightening. Wondering how you think it could play out and if anything could be done.
Great question. There is, I know, that is a very good question. And Parler has very real data security issues in addition to its many other issues. Certainly, that is not uncommon for far-right sites to migrate to Russian hosting companies. There are a couple of downsides. There's actually a pretty good thread about this on Twitter that I will send to our producers by a network analyst and disinformation specialist. And one of the things he says is that the downside of migrating to Russian or Chinese hosting services is that you are then subject to NSA surveillance. Like right now, the NSA can't surveil domestic servers. And in fact, that was a big part of the SolarWinds pack, which is that they, you know, launched some of those breaches from domestic servers, and so they were invisible to the NSA. So being hosted in Russia is not ideal if you don't want people to spy on you.
Remind people what SolarWinds was, because it took me a second and I follow this stuff.
Yes, totally. SolarWinds, the big, previously the big news of January 2021, which broke in December, but the fact that there had been this Russian intrusion into multiple federal agencies and possibly lots of Fortune 500 companies through this software provider, SolarWinds, which we're still sort of waiting to see any potential fallout from. Like, it's easy to forget in the midst of insurrection and impeachment and pandemic. That there's also this like ticking time bomb of this big breach out there. But yes, that was one of the ways that that was accomplished, is that this intrusion through this sort of delivery software happened on US-based servers. So currently it's looking a little like Parler is going to be hosted by a US-based company called Epic, which hosts Gab, which is another kind of, you know, do whatever you want service. But to be honest, the CEO of Parler is tweeting even today that given all of the various sort of withdrawals of support and the technology hurdle involved in sort of rewriting its code to be hosted on a different platform, because AWS has specific rules, that there's kind of a like near zero possibility of it ever coming back. So there you go. It's a data nightmare, because all of its data, we should say, has been like hacked and downloaded. Parler apparently was collecting user social security numbers. Like, the Parler story and all of its data, I mean, you know, we interviewed somebody today at this investigative journalism site. They're just doing a thread posting all of the videos that people took from the riot in the Capitol, just one after the other, that were downloaded from Parler by this hacker before it was taken offline. So it might not ever come back, we'll still hear about it.
Let me give a shout out here to the talk we had yesterday with Nina Jankowicz on the Tuesday Deep Dive show. It's on the website. Mm-hmm. It's so good. We could have gone for another 2 hours with her, but yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All disinformation all the time.
Yep. All the time.
All right, we got another voice memo. Our favorite thing. From Matt in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Kai and Molly. For years, Americans have been blamed for not saving enough money. How has the coronavirus situation affected the national savings rate? Will we see a huge economic boom when everything opens back up and people are free to spend again? Thanks.
Oh, good question. Good question. So, yeah, back after the economy shut down, the savings rate went up, obviously, because people didn't have things to spend money on, up to like 33-something percent. It went really, really high, which for Americans is crazy high. The thing is, of course, as the summer went on and as people started buying goods, right? We're not buying services, right? We're not buying travel experiences. We're not buying stuff, concerts and all of that jazz, right? We're buying stuff. We're buying cars and dishwashers and washing machines and yay, all that fun stuff. Big screen TVs and gaming consoles. We're buying all of that stuff. So the savings rate has gone down. I think it's like 8% now or something at the beginning of the year. The thing is about this year, I think it's going to keep falling more because once we can all go out and spend money again, this thing called pent-up demand is going to happen where people are going to go bananas buying stuff, right? I personally will, right? We're going to buy trips and we're going to buy skis and we're going to buy, you know, all this stuff that we haven't been able really to use. And that's going to send the savings rate down. Now, double-edged sword, right? Because you want people in an economy to have savings so that they can weather the bad times and also just because having money in the bank is good just in case. But at the same time, the American economy is, repeat after me, driven spending on behalf of consumers, is 70% of this economy. So we need people to spend money, which is going to happen. So, you know, take your pick. What do you want, savings or spending? You want a little bit of both.
Well, and not for nothing, but if you're not invested in the stock market and you're just sort of saving in interest-bearing accounts, which is a very old-fashioned thing that used to happen, children, when I was, you know, 10 to 15 years ago even.
Passbook savings.
There's virtually no point. Like, you used to be able to just put money in your bank account and earn like 4%. It was amazing. Those days are gone.
Right.
For now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last question of the day. I kind of love this question. We're gonna hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Go. Hi, Kai and Molly. My name is Jane Hatter from Austin, Texas, and I was on a rage run the other day, which I have been using during the pandemic to help my mental state. And I was thinking about my new favorite show, Ted Lasso. And I was wondering if there's an example that you guys can think of an economic or business leader who's kind of that fish out of water story and succeeded and done really well. Someone who you just really didn't expect to excel in their position, kind of like Ted Lasso. Really, I was just trying to figure out how to relate this to your show so I could hear you guys talk about it. Thanks so much. Bye.
I love it. You didn't have to come up with a really hard question. You could have just been like, guys, are we all into Ted Lasso as much as I think we are? Because we are, right? Yes, we are.
Oh, totally.
True story.
I will tell you that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
I've got one too. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, true story. I gifted. Okay, so the streaming economy is stupid. And you should be able to gift someone like a show.
Oh, yeah.
And you cannot. And you cannot gift someone an Apple TV subscription directly. You have to buy like a rando iTunes gift card. And then they have to go through 30. So I bought my dad and my stepmom a like, you know, $25 iTunes gift card code and then sent them this email with all these like super specific instructions on how to try to find an Apple device and open the device and use it to subscribe to Apple TV. And then I was like, and all of that is just because I want to gift you this show, Dad Lasso.
Wow.
But we literally just finished talking right before the podcast and they were like, we did the same thing. We watched it. And then we just went right back to the beginning, watched it all over again because it's amazing.
Oh, that's pretty funny. My whole family is on a big Survivor binge. And they are working their way through all 40 seasons of that show. And I frankly have checked out. I'm like, I just can't. I just can't with the Survivor and Jeff Probst and all this jazz, right? Because it's the same show 40 different times.
Same show every time. Yep.
Right. So when they start doing their two-hour nightly, whatever the hell it is with Survivor, I go into the living room and I take my iPad with me and I scroll through shows I want to watch. And I discovered Ted Lasso the other day and I binged it. I'm done and I loved it. And I was like, oh yeah, it's so good. It's
incredible.
So good. So yeah, it's worth Apple TV if that's your thing. So
it really is.
I have a couple that I can think of.
Okay.
One is a little dicey and the other one I will be curious to get your reaction. The first, and this is, I'm kind of cheating a little bit, but Jay Powell at the Fed. Now, he's been around international finance a long time. He was on the board of governors before he got the big job. But I think you could ask people in economic observation land, and they would say, you know what? Jay Powell has done himself really well. He's dealt with, number one, the president of the United States, which if you remember the first 18 months of Powell's tenure, he was going to be fired every other Thursday, and the president was saying ridiculous things about him. But also, in this pandemic, I think Powell has really been steady, and I think he's done a great job. Yes, comes from investment banking, has been in Treasury, but I don't think anybody thought of him for the top gig at the Fed and said, that's your guy. Number two, and I will be curious to get your feedback on this one, it's not business and economics, but I would say that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has blown the freaking doors off, right? Comes out of New York City. She'd been a waitress, right? And now is first of all, she's a natural politician, but she is, I mean, if you watch her in committee hearings, she is unbelievable. And I think that's one for me that you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Okay, so what's so funny about that is that the person who came to mind for me, well, okay, to be fair, the person who almost immediately came to mind for me because I'm a nerd is Steph Curry. I was like, I'm just saying, he barely even got drafted and he's so small. And yeah, he really, that's just because I'm a sports nerd. But the second one that immediately came to mind that I've been thinking about so much over the course of the last like couple weeks is Cori Bush, the congresswoman from Missouri.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Who was formerly homeless, right? Who is the person who went on TV and in talking about people who refused to go through the metal detector in Congress was like, have you ever had a job before? Like if you work at McDonald's, you have to wear the uniform. Like, you know, she's like, she talks about having been a victim of violent crime, a survivor of sexual assault and domestic violence, living without insurance, being homeless, and has just, I think very in a very similar way to AOC, who just managed to become a phenomenon by also being incredibly competent. Like, and they're referring to Cori Bush as sort of the newest member of the squad. And I think what we're seeing is this really, like, we're seeing a totally different type of representation that is effective and competent and dangerous, and all the responses to it are saying that, yeah, none of these fish ever should have been out of the water in the first place.
Right, right. Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Never should have been out of the water. That's a good one.
I also agree with you, on Jay Powell. Yeah. Like, he seemed like a revenge posting. Because it really did just seem like he's just trying to get rid of, like, the Obama people and just put in a rando or whatever. And he's been very impactful.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, totally good, has. Good totally one. Has. Good one. And I would love to hear what people think. Actually, not of our choices, but of others, you know, of some renown, right, who we all will know. Let us know. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Hook us up. Otherwise, that is it, I believe, for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. Back tomorrow with Hollowed Out Shell of a Thursday, because that's the way this country rolls right now.
Send us your thoughts. Beer.
We'd love to hear from you. All right, on Thursday? Can we do that?
Yes. Yes. Are you kidding? Like, when it's a new rule, when it's days we're going to be talking about for hundreds of years, we are allowed
That's
to
true.
Bring beer.
That's fair. That's
Make
fair.
Make Me Smart is produced totally and fair. Directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and smart speakers bill, which, anyway, the thing where if you just Those say, things. Alexa, make me smart, then you get really cool, interesting stories that Erica writes, and I encourage you to check them out. They're outstanding.
Excellent. They are indeed. Garrett Lang engineered today down in the studio. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez did the theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer. The executive director of On Demand is one Sitar Nieves.
Smart spokos gusabala first. Sorry for setting off your devices.
Oh, I know, man. Which I think is funny that that happens, by the way.
I know. Seriously, it's Steph Curry, though. I'm just saying.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.